Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is a very special one because we have one of our old friends in here.
Hey, this is going to be a lot of fun. Please join me in welcoming back to the broadcast with the Knorr Group, Inc. He's an author, more than a one-time author, and he has written Relationship Economics and Co-Create, Mr. David Knorr. Welcome back, man.
It is good to be back with you guys.
Well, David, thanks for making it in the studio, because before the show aired, you mentioned you travel 200 days out of the year.
Yeah, I'm blessed. Between
that's a blessing?
Between speaking and consulting and executive coaching and I'm on the road a good bit. And the funny part is I've always believed you're never a hero in your own hometown, right? So I can go to Dubai, but somehow getting engagements down the street just doesn't quite work out.
So, you cracked the code. You figured it out. So
yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. It's a ton of fun. Love working with great clients. Love working with really forward-thinking, visionary executives. It's a lot of fun.
So now, when you back in the day, when you came up with this concept of about the value of relationships, and you were trying to get the word out about it, how was it received at that? In the early days.
Sure. So it's one of those terms. When you tell people, when you start talking about business relationships, I meet very few people who don't get its importance. Right. Most of us have either found a job because we knew somebody, or. Right. We've gotten promoted because we had a great relationship. And again, I focus on the business side of things. And so most people get the importance of relationships. Unfortunately, most people don't understand its significance. And by that, I mean, people still refer to it as a soft skill, right? Or we somehow think, other people pick it up through osmosis. Versus what I've learned over the years is very few people are actually born knowing how to do this just intuitively or naturally. Most of us,
when you say do this, what does this
build
mean?
And nurture really strategic, really productive, really impactful relationships, right? So most of us can network. We can go to events and get cards and give cards, and that's really transactional.
So you're defining networking as more of, hey, what do you do? I do this. Here's my card. See you later, bye.
That's right.
And then just kind of work in the room kind of thing.
And most people cringe at that, right?
Right. Because one's like, I can't wait to do that. Where do I sign up for more of that?
Right. My wife calls it icky. She's like, ew, right. I don't want to go do that. Right? Right. And most of us will go back with a stack of business cards. And here's the crazy part. We won't do anything about it.
Right. Then we'll put them in a drawer with the other stack that we got last week.
And then every time you open that drawer, they stare at you. Right. Are you ever going to call us?
Making you feel guilty that you're doing it wrong. Some people are doing it right, but I'm doing it wrong.
Are you ever going to call me? Are you ever going to have a good conversation? What happened? So that's it. That's right. I talk a lot about networking as transactional, right?
Okay.
They come, they go, we don't really put a lot of thought and effort into it. What I really want people to do is think about fewer relationships, but deeper ones, more meaningful ones, right? And unfortunately, social networking and social media is the antithesis of what I'm talking about, right? Because we connect with all these people on LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter. We don't know anything about them.
We're collecting them like they're baseball cards when we were a kid, right?
Versus, can you make, and this is a very practical, pragmatic tip for your listeners, right? Can you sit and make a list of your A, B, C relationships? Who are 10 people? 20 people, 30 people that are both very relevant to your world, very relevant to what you're trying to do, but they genuinely know you. They like you. They trust you. You have some history together.
But that's, you see, that number isn't a scary number. You're just asking for 10, 20, 30.
Sure.
It's not 100, 500, 1,000.
That's right. That's right. And here's the crazy part. Sociologists tell us that an average individual can proactively manage about 100 to 150 relationships. Here's a $1 million question. Which ones?
Right.
And if I learned in engineering years ago, you cannot possibly improve something you don't measure.
Okay.
So all these people you know, respectfully, so what? Right.
Right.
How many of them will return your calls and emails in 24 hours?
Right.
How many of them, if you don't reach out to them, will take the time, make the time to reach out to you and ask, how are things going? And how's business radio going? And how's your business going? Right. So unfortunately, we've gotten very accustomed to confusing. I talk about confusing vibration with forward motion.
Mm-hmm.
We collect a lot of contacts, but are we really investing time and effort to build and nurture meaningful relationships.
Now, you mentioned social media earlier, and then maybe this is part of the problem in the sense that, oh, I could read what David's doing.
I don't need to talk to him.
I can see his picture in Dubai having a good time.
Sure.
And then he can see my picture in the studio with somebody. And then we think we're having a relationship.
Yeah.
But in actuality, it's like you said, it's vibration. It's the illusion of a relationship.
Sure. So in the last book, Co-Create, I talk about the Jerry Maguire business model after the movie.
Right.
Instead of all those contacts, instead of the perception that we have a relationship, what are you doing to, as I said, invest in those? Here's the key thing that I think your audience needs to hear. Every day, we're asking people to trust us.
Right.
Come work for us, buy from me, partner with me, invest in me, whatever your business is. We're asking other people to trust us. What are you doing to give them a chance to get to know you?
Right.
Because if you've traveled anywhere outside of the US, think of Europe, think of Middle East, think of South America, the rest of the world, put Asia, the rest of the world builds relationships first from which they do business.
Right.
Unfortunately, as Americans, we're so focused on the business part that if and only if this business part works, at some point I'll
then
ask
it'll
about,
be worth my time.
At some point I'll ask you about your family or your friends or what do you do outside of work. But until then, let's get back to this project plan or let's get back to this purchase order because I'm not interested otherwise. And that is such a huge mistake because, again, I don't know about your dad. My dad drove into me. People deal with. People prioritize. People work with. People want to be around. People they like. Mm-hmm. And they trust and they respect and that investment. The other thing is, I hear all the time, I'm busy. Show me who isn't.
Right.
Who
Everyone's
isn't busy?
Busy.
So when I hear I'm busy, what I'm hearing is that project, that relationship isn't a priority.
Right. I'm too busy for you.
Right.
I'm not too busy for the world.
we make time. My wife calls and says, I got to be at the kids' school for something. Guess what? I'm going to put that on my calendar and I'll be there.
Right.
So we'll make time for things that are important to us. So I'm working with a client and they're one of their biggest challenges is they're not getting return calls and emails. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, newsflash, you're not a priority.
Right.
Because if you're a priority, people will make the time to get back to you.
It's worth their time.
And do projects for you and lift, you know, the heavy weights for you. And but again, that's a lot easier to ask of others if you start by investing in others.
Right.
Right. And the whole idea of investing time, investing effort, investing resources, hell, introducing two people to each other that you think would benefit from getting to know each other.
Right.
Without expecting anything in return. If you do just that, you're now investing in two, what I call relationship banks, that then it's going to be a heck of a lot easier for you to ask for a withdrawal from.
Right.
But I don't know about your bank. My bank won't let me make a $100 deposit and get $1,000 in return.
Right.
Yet we get favors. People ask us favors all the time where they've never earned the right to do so.
Right.
All the time. So I talk about relationship givers. God bless Mother Teresa. People mm-hmm. who just altruistically give. Mm-hmm. They just love giving. Most of us can't be pure givers because I don't know about you. I've got something called a mortgage.
Right.
You got relationship takers. Have you ever met this type? The only time they call is when they want something.
When they need help moving or a ride to the airport.
Or a new job.
Right. Yeah. Right?
And by the way, people then transition, network like mad. This is why I despise the idea of networking. They network like mad till they find a job.
And then
they go dark. Exactly. And everybody who helped them get there till 3 years from now when they call you back.
And they need a new job.
That's exactly right. And here's my favorite. I haven't talked to you in a while. Why don't we meet and catch up?
Right. That means you lost your job or about to lose your job.
There's a translation for catching up. I want something.
Right.
So that's why networking is transactional. I talk about focus on a more disciplined approach to really invest in, really make the time to invest in fewer but deeper relationships. And by the way, it's not about you. It's not about you. It's all about them. So my favorite one-hour visit is when they're talking 50 minutes of it.
Right.
Because I've done a decent job asking, hopefully, intelligent, engaging questions, and I've built an environment where they feel comfortable talking to me.
Right.
But if you're not listening, you can't possibly understand what is it that they need, what is it that they prioritize, how can you help? And these are some of the foundations of building a great relationship.
Now, in the news today, we're hearing a lot about this whole Me Too and women and minorities not getting access to have these relationships that they need to further their careers.
Sure.
And, you know, whenever that is, when there's a power kind of imbalance, then bad stuff happens.
Of course.
Now, how can there be, can somebody who isn't in power or wants access to a higher level, are there strategies they can use to leverage these kind of same skills that you're referring to, where it's not two equals or two peers, it's somebody who is learning or beginning and they want to rise?
Yep. Great question. So let me preface my comments by really articulating that I've always believed relationships go bad with misaligned expectations. Out of a second. You and I met, we talked about here's what we're going to do. So I have a certain level that I'm expecting. If I get anything less than that, the gap is where we're going to have a problem.
Right.
You said you were going to do this. Much lower level is what I experienced, or a different experience. And I'm like, whoa, what happened? Right? That's where the idea of a bait and switch, or that's where an idea of, when I interviewed for this job, it was a very different job than when I actually got the job and showed up day one, right?
Right.
So I'm a big believer of align expectations early and often, right? So regardless of your business stature, we make a lot of assumptions, right? What you said isn't necessarily what I heard, but without confirming that, how often have we seen this happen, right? People take away and they assume something was going to happen. And when it doesn't, they're disappointed, but they never clarified or they're never aligned. That's what we agreed to, right? So number one, align expectations early and often. Number two, regardless of where you are in your business maturity, if you're in the spring of your career, summer, fall, even in the winter of your career, I'm a big believer of you're never too old or too young to be a mentor or find mentors, right? So I work with a lot of women executives and you see some incredible raw ingredients in someone and so much potential. But if that energy, if that excitement, if that education isn't channeled in the right direction, she's never going to flourish. She's never going to become the executive that she can become. So I mentored them. I coached them and go find three mentors, one within your function, right? Your organization. Mm-hmm. Two within the company, but outside of what you do. Three, somebody completely outside of your world who can get a fresh lens on what's happening. And if you can help them develop a vested interest in your success, they become phenomenal sounding boards. Mm-hmm. Because here's what some young people need to hear. Chris, you are brilliant. But as long as you're abrasive, nobody's ever going to see that brilliance. As long as you keep burning bridges, you're never going to be able to work with other people. So we coach them about their business. We coach them about their industry. We coach them about competition. We coach them about a lot of things. We seldom coach them in their business behaviors, business relationship behaviors, and what is it really going to take to succeed. So the Me Too thing is incredibly unfortunate. And the men who do that kind of stuff are just pigs. That's the only way I can describe it. So, and I've got a daughter, so I'm coaching her. Don't put yourself ever in those situations.
Right.
No job is ever worth it. Number two, if you build and nurture mentor relationships, people that you can confide in, people you can trust and go talk to, something like that comes up, you've got sounding board. You've got, in essence, a personal board of advisors who you can go talk to and say, here's what I'm struggling with. Here's what my issue is. Here's what's happening with my creepy boss, whatever the case is. But building those relationships that you can confide in at work are critical.
Mm-hmm. And then so when you have these sounding board, and that's an interesting, I'm sure you chose those words carefully and specifically, a sounding board isn't a person that is like going to hook you up, get you a job, something like that. They're just there to hear what you're having to say and then kind of offer their perspective on things.
That's exactly right. So think about people you like, people you trust, people you respect. Right. A friend of mine, I had a big birthday this past week and a milestone one. And a friend of mine says age is a terrible price to pay for wisdom. Right. I've also believed most people don't paint on the gray hair.
Right.
Right. So again, if you're in the spring of your career, that sounding board hopefully has some wisdom that he or she's earned over the years.
Right.
That can be a great just that. Here's what I'm thinking. What do you think? Right. And give them a chance to give you some feedback independently of your challenges, and it's typically relational challenges, right? I have a really difficult time getting along with this person. How should I tackle that? I'm working for a really difficult boss that has got incredible demands of me. How should I deal with that? Those are all phenomenal opportunities for you to learn and grow that, again, unfortunately, our kids aren't taught this stuff in schools. It's not, relationships aren't part of anybody's new hire training.
Right.
So we expect people to pick this stuff up, but we don't integrate it into our coaching, our mentoring, our development curriculum, if you will.
Now, let's get back to the book a little bit. Co-Create has been out for a little bit now. So how's it going?
It's going really well. It is book number 10. I have a mentor who's driven into me. It's amazing how stupid I was 2 weeks ago, right? Because you learn as much about your topic after the book comes out as you did researching and writing it. And I'm blessed that a lot of clients, a lot of friends have read it, and they consistently say they believe it's some of my best work. And they believe this idea that, and again, I'm a big believer that we're products of the advice we take. Right. And a mentor is driven into me. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Right.
So none of us have all the answers. None of us really have any kind of a crystal ball of where our business or our future or industry is going. We're all figuring that as we go. Right. So this idea of co-create, as we talked about last time, is I believe every individual, every team, every organization needs to evolve to remain relevant. Mm-hmm. What if you evolve through, let me know if you've heard this one, few but really meaningful, deep, strategic relationships.
Wow.
People who
What's
know,
old is new again, right? What,
people who know you, people who like you, people who trust you, people who've had some experience working with you and can put their heads together. Two heads are better than one. Of how can we create something together where 1 + 1 = 11?
Right.
Where neither one of us could have created something that impactful alone. But together, we're that much stronger. We're that much more differentiated. We're that much more relevant to what the market is looking for. So it's being well received. I'm speaking a lot on it. I'm creating custom co-create canvas for clients. It really is part of a bigger change management initiative, which again, I'm amazed at some of the large companies that I come across that are still struggling with this notion of evolving and changing. But the good news is executives get it. That mm-hmm. And one of my favorite books, Marshall Goldsmith wrote a book called What's Gotten You Here Won't Get You There.
Right.
And that title is so dead on of what's made your company successful to date, or you or your team, may or may not be what gets you to the next stages of your growth. So how will you not just create your future, but co-create your future?
Now, so you're finding that companies are open to the idea of this really high level of collaboration and partnering with other firms that are maybe tangentially related or sometimes not even related at all. They're opening their mind to the possibility of how can together we attack this challenge?
Yes, with a caveat. Are companies? No. Are visionary leaders? Yes.
Okay, so it takes that kind of maverick.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes. So what I get excited about is finding that one executive who either they either are starting to feel it in their business, or they're trying to get ahead of the ball. Right? They see the writing on the wall. They see what's happening.
Right? Because some companies are, I call them dead men walking. You know, they don't know it yet.
Right.
But there's something ahead.
I ask them the same. Are you the next Kodak and you don't know it? Are
right.
you the next BlackBerry RIM and you don't know it?
But they don't realize those things happen. Gradually, then
sure.
suddenly.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Can I tell you a quick story?
Sure.
So people ask, what do you do for fun? I ride motorcycles. So a couple years ago, I rode my motorcycle across the entire Route 66.
Wow.
Right? Iconic. It's Americana. Right.
right?
You hear about it. You've seen pictures. I thought it'd be so cool to actually go see the whole thing. So I literally rode from Atlanta to Chicago and then Chicago all the way out to Santa Monica Pier.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's about 3,000 miles. It took me a week. And here's the fascinating part about Route 66. Number one, it's sad in some ways because a lot of it are boarded up and it's just desolate and cities that are just gone. But there's still some they've saved and it's just beautiful. And it's just, again, it just takes you back to the 50s and 60s, right? At some places where Route 66 has deteriorated, Highway 40, which replaced it, is literally 10 to 20 feet away, right? You can actually
see it.
Right? The whole time I'm writing, I'm thinking, I wonder how many businesses are still running their business like they're on Route 66. And by the way, newsflash, the market is going
right
by you.
And you can see
right?
it.
But they have still customers and they still are doing business
right.
and people coming in. So what I'm learning is most executives are savvy enough to see the trends. they just either can't or they're not willing to move with enough agility, with enough nimbleness to do something about it, mm-hmm. right? So, and I used the analogy. I was speaking at an event recently, and I thought of dodgeball. If you've ever played dodgeball or paintball or any of those, where the object is to hit somebody else, if you move out of the way kind of slowly, guess what? Somebody's getting hit.
Right.
Somebody's getting hit. So what do? We pivot, we move, we dodge, right? But you got to do it quickly and you got to make course correction. Unfortunately, companies have become these perfect execution boxes. And you know what I call shiny, new, interesting, cool ideas?
What?
Cancer.
That's bad.
And the chief, you know, compliance officer, the chief legal counsel, the CFO, you know what they are? Oncologists. Their job is to extract this cool, shiny, new idea because it doesn't fit in our perfect execution box.
In the status quo.
That's exactly right. So especially mature companies in mature industries, think of manufacturing. Think of a lot of traditional financial services. Think of a lot of professional services.
Well, because they have a lot of bureaucracy built.
Oh my God, 18 levels.
To get rid of that, right. It's not worth that. Not on my watch. That'll be the next guy's job.
This is my sandbox. Don't pee in my sandbox. Right. So it's so difficult to get these large organizations. So when you say, do you see companies that are receptive to this? Unfortunately, no. What I get excited about are individuals. Mm-hmm. Individual executives who are willing to put their experience, their reputation,
and political capital,
their credibility, their relationships, their political capital on the line to think and lead differently. That's one. Number two, I've yet to meet a company that doesn't need fresh blood, doesn't need fresh thinking. One of our clients hired this brilliant woman, early 30s, from Amazon. She's gotten more done in the last 6 months than these guys were able to do in the last 2 years.
Right. It's like a blood transfusion.
Right. She just doesn't come with all the baggage. She hasn't been in this business for 30 years, right? And she's, what I love about what she's doing is she's constantly challenging the status quo.
Right.
She constantly says, why do we do that again? And why are we doing it that way?
That's how we did it last quarter.
Last quarter, last 5 years, last 10 years, right? So it's imperative for companies to find opportunities to attract fresh thinking, fresh lenses, but you cannot drag him into your corporate fiefdoms, right? You got to create opportunities for them to really thrive.
These safe spaces where they're kind of protected and let them do what they do.
Absolutely.
Rather than force them into your world.
And God bless them, may his soul rest in peace. Steve Jobs, right, said, it is stupid for us to hire smart people and then tell them what to do. We should hire smart people so they can tell us what to do.
Right.
We hire these really bright, I've got to stop calling them kids, but let's just call them kids, right? We hire these really bright kids and then we shove them in some, you know, cube on the 30th floor of, and they become a cog in the wheel.
Right.
Versus we work with a client and we literally created a job that we call cool hunters. Their job was to go figure out, go hang out with their friends, go figure out where the market is, go and bring those, again, a disciplined process, but bring those ideas back and figure out where the relevancy is for these very mature companies. That's how you start to transform the culture from everything we've always done, the way we've done it, to making a whole lot of bets about how we're going to evolve. So in the book, I talk about pilot and prototype. I talk about exactly that. Putting a lot of bets out there, knowing that a lot of them may never go anywhere.
Right.
But if one or two, this is how the venture capital world works, right? If one or two come through, it's going to be a very different business in 3, 5, 8 years than it is today.
But a lot of these kind of legacy businesses that have been around a long time, their risk tolerance is so low that they'd rather hit singles than, you know, try to hit home runs. Then when you're trying to hit home runs, you're going to strike out a lot.
No question.
And that's hard to strike out a lot and make your way up the corporate ladder.
That's why I wrote an article recently, top 10 reasons why these corporate innovation initiatives are not going to work. Why? They're still within the corporate box, right? So if you want an idea to thrive, if you want to create this innovative culture and transform the culture, you've got to get it away from the corporate structure. You got to get it away from the corporate campus. You got to get it away from, put them at WeWork, put them at any of these other, you know, work sharing spaces, but get them away from that execution box. Also, give them some air cover, because if they have to report back to the CFO, what are we doing with that money? it's not going to get anywhere, right? You got to give them that freedom. You got to give, again, I believe in, you know, guardrails, right? Let's create an environment where they get a chance to go test a lot of ideas. And it's got to also, here's the other thing. I work with a client who, I kid you not, put a 34-year executive in the company in charge of the innovation. Nicest guy in the world, right? You meet him, you want to hug him, right? Greatest guy in the world. I'm pretty sure he wouldn't know what innovation was if it was water and he fell out of a boat. Right? So you got to put fresh thinking, fresh perspective on that. Somebody who, as I said earlier, doesn't have the baggage, that is going to really start thinking very differently about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how should our business, how can our business evolve in the value that it creates for its target audience?
Mm-hmm. And like you said, you see so many companies where they, in their head, it makes sense. They whiteboard this out and say, we should do something like that. And then when it comes time to hiring this person, and this person comes with a lot of sharp edges, and they, by the time they get through the machine, they're a round peg inside the round hole. And they're like, how did this not work?
Yeah.
It's like, because you defanged them, you just sucked the soul out of them, and they can't deliver what you wanted.
Here's what's happening is we're seeing those people phenomenal. I got a call from one of my clients a couple of days ago. The only executive in this company that we had met, and I've known him for several years, who was both willing and able to think and lead differently, he's burned out.
Right.
He literally called me and said, I haven't told the CEO yet, but I'm leaving. And of course, my first question, who recruited you, right? Who grabbed you? Where are you going? He said, nowhere. I don't have another job.
I'd rather do nothing than do what I'm doing here.
It's affecting
here
and my health.
Right.
It's affecting my
what
health.
I'm getting paid.
And if when it affects your health, when it affects your happiness, the cost is too high.
Right.
So this guy's been banging his head against the wall to try to get this leadership team to think differently. And when you're not getting anywhere, it takes the wind out of your sail. So most of those people, unfortunately, burning out, they're leaving, you know, and he's done financially well. So it's not like he's desperate for a job. But the fact that he's leaving, I'm telling you, leaves a gaping hole in this management team because everybody else was, you know, very focused on that perfect execution box. This was the only guy who was trying to transform this business.
Right.
And for him to leave is going to leave a massive void of that really forward-thinking capability, that forward-thinking skill.
But a lot of those types of companies, they'll just rationalize it as, oh, it wasn't a good fit,
he wasn't the right person
for the job, you know. And they'll rationalize it away instead of looking at it as a missed opportunity and the opportunity cost of having somebody that could have transformed the business. And then they could be one of those dead men walking down.
No question.
Know, in a few years.
The other thing is, and I'm going to give you and your audience some glimpse into my next book and what I'm thinking of. It's all around this idea of future of work. Mm-hmm. So I've identified 15 forces that are impacting what I believe will be the intersection of strategic relationships and the future of work. And one of them is geopolitical and centers of economic power. You know, we brought up, I was recently in Dubai. I don't quote me on this, but I think that the U.S. tax laws is up to like $100,000 I can make outside as an expat tax-free, right? Mm-hmm. So every time I go to Dubai, and I was there three times this past year, the last 18 months, you see more cranes, right? And they're building buildings like you wouldn't believe. And here's the crazy part. There's actually no oil in Dubai, right? The closest oil is in Abu Dhabi, which is an hour and a half away. Dubai is all foreign investment, right? So all kinds of companies are establishing presence and the government is doing some really forward-thinking stuff. I actually saw an autonomous a drone that carries that person, right?
A human being,
top of one building. It was only 5 or 6 stories.
That's
from
all.
Top of one building to another one, right? Talk about the people that are courageous enough to get in that thing.
Right.
But my point is they're really forward-thinking. They're doing some really interesting stuff. They've got a equivalent of our cabinet member, deputy minister of artificial intelligence, right? They literally are that forward thinking. If I'm a bright kid coming out of our top schools right now, do I want to go work for crappy company down the street where they're going to shove me in some cube? Or you better believe I'm going to buy an airplane ticket and go to other markets where my forward thinking is appreciated,
right.
It's recognized, it's put in the right growth engines. And here's the news leaders need to hear. That next generation of critical talent you need for the success, future success of your business isn't going to hang around. Isn't going to...
Yeah, they're not going to wait for the gold watch. Those days are over.
Long gone.
And so if you're not stimulating, you're not challenging them, you're not giving them the opportunity, somebody will, because they're hungry for that type of talent.
I'll go one more. Again, in Co-Create, I wrote about this idea, what I call the Hollywood talent model. If you think about Hollywood, very few people actually work for the studio, right? The studio will license the screenplay and hire an executive producer.
They're good co-creators.
Absolutely.
That's
how they go about
their business.
Yeah, they go hire the front of the camera and back of the camera. I don't know what a grip is, but go get me the best grip person because that's what we need. And they work toward a common mission, common vision for a period of time. That movie's done. Guess what? There's no guarantee of future employment other than the quality of your work and the quality of your relationships.
Right.
That's the only way you find the next gig.
Right.
I would submit more and more of that is going to start creeping into our companies and our industries. And I'm doing this right now. I'm working on a project where the client doesn't care whose business card you bring with you, right? What they care about, and again, if you've built and nurtured the right relationship, they care about the outcome. So I'm part of this loose affiliation of other, we call ourselves the unhirables, right? People that don't want a job, they don't want to work for anybody, they want to be independent, but we go in together based on our respective skills and based on our breadth and depth of experience in a particular area.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a phenomenal innovation partner that I take with me when that's appropriate,
right?
I've got a phenomenal Six Sigma black belt lady who's very good at the whole processes that we take in with us when that's what it calls. So, and again, I'm trying to tell you, clients don't care. What they want is great work done.
And they know you can bring the all-star team to the table.
That's exactly right. And again, I call it the Hollywood talent model. They know, they trust you as that executive producer to really coordinate the front of the camera and behind the camera talent to produce that vision that you all have co-created together.
And then it's like you said, some projects may require the Adam Sandler mafia and his crew, and then others want the Scorsese mafia and their crew Tarantino mafia. You know, everyone has a different need, and you just go to the right person that can put that team together to give you the outcome you desire. And it's all available in today's world because, you know, the world is flat in that regard. You can have experts and colleagues from anywhere on the planet now.
That's exactly right. And again, everybody's heard of the gig economy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to tell you, it is more prevalent. It's not just Uber and Airbnb and, you know, TaskRabbit and any of those apps. It is much more prevalent in professional worlds, and it's becoming more prevalent where more and more people, again, the innovation partner I take in, she was a client of mine 15 years ago here in town, and they transferred her she did a great job here in the US, so they transferred to Europe. She did a great job in Europe, so they sent her to Asia Pacific. And guess what? She got married, she had a baby, and it dawned on her, I don't want to work.
Right.
I don't want to work that kind of crazy hours, right?
Right.
And I don't want to travel. And so now she went out on her own, and guess what? She's busier and she's doing more interesting work, but she's home for her kids and she's home for her husband. And right. So the quality of life, your purpose, your well-being tends to become a lot more important than that 9-to-5 job or that 9-to-5 paycheck. And I can make money with my skills, my talent, with my relationships in other ways. So that whole gig economy is just going to become more prevalent.
And it's evolving into, like you said, this kind of Hollywood production model where these teams are nimble and fluid and they are working on different projects simultaneously all over the place.
Focused on a common mission, common vision. Well, here's the other one, common enemy. Think of over-legislation or think of something that we think is wrong, right? Or social cause. Give people that lighthouse, give people that purpose. And it's amazing how they'll coalesce together to get that done.
Mm-hmm. And that's what, again, that's where you differentiate yourself, where you stand out and say, this is what I stand for. This is what I stand against. And then you attract those like-minded people to help whatever the project may be.
It's a movement, not management.
Right. And that, again, these kind of legacy firms, these old ways of thinking, that's a bridge too far for them.
And if you think about their business model, it's labor arbitrage, right? I'm going to bring you freshly minted MBAs for $250 an hour. Right.
Right.
And I'm going to pay them $50 an hour. And that's how I make my margin to build the buildings I build. We don't believe that's the way the business is going to move forward. Right. It's let me go in with a SEAL Team 6, get in, get the work done, get out.
And then you can call me again in 2 years if you need me again.
Versus a battalion. So we are literally on our sixth project with a client over the last year. But it's get in, do the work, do great work, deliver incredible value. And if you do a good job, guess what? Those who get it will call you back.
Right.
And they'll bring you back to help you do other things. But the idea of going anywhere and hanging out with them for the next 5 years and, you know, busing kids in on Mondays and busing them out on Fridays. And I think that's just an incredibly outdated thinking and outdated model.
Right. And now part of your work in your future of work is you're involved with Emory and you're doing your professor, Nora now.
Professor David.
There we go. Yeah. Both of my parents are teachers. Both of my wife's parents are teachers. So I've always been passionate about, you know, that whole knowledge transfer. Mm-hmm. And I did. I went to Georgia State for undergrad and the Goswara Business School here in town for my the executive MBA. And it was just such a phenomenal experience and great, great professors, great academic environment, but also a phenomenal network, by the way. So they've invited me back several times over the years to serve on panels and as a, you know, judging competitions and so on and so forth. And I actually, we had the Co-Create book launch down at Emory. And I met J.B. Koresh, who's an associate dean of the executive education program. So most people know universities for their degree programs. There's a whole separate side where you get certificates and it's a non-degree, but you go and get extended education. So yeah, I'm elated that over the next year, I'll be teaching 4 executive education courses on some of the stuff that I've been working on. So
on these quote unquote soft skills.
First one is coming up. I think it's in June. It's relationship economics for attorneys.
Oh, wow.
So if you think about it, most attorneys are good, very good at what they do, but the perception is I'm a really good attorney. Why wouldn't the business just come?
Yeah.
Right? Those days are long gone. Right. So it's really, and unfortunately they see sales as a dirty word, right? So we're going to really help them understand how to leverage their existing relationships to uncover more opportunities and do that in a systematic way. So,
and that's a lot of these professional service firms, their job requirements have evolved from just doing the work to now it's an eat what you kill kind of world,
exactly right? And if you think about that world, if you come in as an associate into a law firm, you're there to learn, you know, into the applications of the law. As you move up and you become a partner candidate, it isn't just you delivering great work. It's also you got to go find and uncover, you know, great opportunities and great client work. So yeah, the first one is relationship economics for attorneys. Then we're going to do one on what we call strategy visualization. So design thinking has been around for a while where you think more visually, I think ever since caveman days, right? We all think better with pictures. We all think better with how to get a story across. So we're gonna we've got a 2-day program on visual thinking. After that, I'm gonna probably do one on forward thinking boards. So if you think of governance, I'm on the board of 2 tech companies, and you know, a lot of boards, unfortunately, and this is some sad data, but the average age of a S&P 500 firm board member today
100.
72.
I was close.
We're very close. Yes,
you're very close. Standard deviation 72. Away.
72. And I cringe when I say this, but unfortunately, many of them are male, pale, and stale, right? It's just again, wisdom, a lot of great experiences, but boards need a lot of refreshing. So I'm working with several boards on creating innovation committees. I'm working with several boards on, and again, the traditional board mentality is nose in, fingers off, right? We're there to ask questions, not to manage. Let the management team do the work. But I believe boards need to become much more proactive. I'm a big believer, big advocate of what I call digital board members. Don't just bring in people to talk about cyber and talk about threats because you don't know what questions to ask. You don't know what to do with the information they give
you. Even if they told you, right.
If you have a digital board member on that board who comes from that either a practitioner or a thought or practice leadership. So a lot of ideas about forward thinking, really visionary boards. And the last one is, interestingly, intersection of healthcare and hospitality. So if you think of the patient experience journey, what can healthcare systems do to create a much more interesting, much more pleasant journey for all of us as patients, all of us as caregivers, all of us as consumers of those healthcare products and services?
Right. So now if somebody wanted to get a hold of your book or book you for a speaking or a consulting gig, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Can I tell them you're my agent? No, I'm kidding. No.
Co-create something.
There you go. If you just go to NOURgroup, NOURgroup.com, that's the best place to learn about me, my work, the books, our social network presence, the blog, videos, all kinds of good stuff. Again, NOURgroup, NOURgroup.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being a guest today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.